is University Forum. I'm Jean Moore, bringing you conversations with outstanding personalities on issues of interest to local, national, and international communities. Our topic today, forensic social work. My guest, Mr. James Andrews, Master of Social Work and a board-certified diplomat of clinical social work by the American Board of Examiners in Clinical Social Work, who has also 20 years of varied experiences demonstrating the strength and breadth of the profession of social work. Welcome to University Forum, Mr. Andrews.
Hello, Jean. How are you?
Oh, I'm delighted to have you. I'm so glad that you were able to make this trip here, and it is kind of a special trip to come down to Philadelphia, isn't it?
It's a little bit of a jog, but I was glad to do it.
What keeps you so busy up there that you are really traveling so much?
Well, I have a lot of things on my plate. I work full-time at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center and their Western Psychiatric Institute and Clinic as a quality improvement manager, and I'm assigned to a local mental health agency as the risk manager and quality assurance manager. I'm also adjunct faculty at the School of Social Work at Pitt, and I teach there.
What do you teach there?
Social welfare and DSM diagnosing class called Human Behavior and Mental Health.
You're not busy at all, are you?
No, that's only half of it. The other part of my time I fill with working with NESW chapter here in Pennsylvania. I'm currently the chair of the Professional Standards Committee for the chapter. I'm also running for vice president of the board of NESW in next year's election.
I look for that.
And finally, when I can find the time, and I make the time for this, it's the most important thing in my life, is my family.
All right. So you have a family?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll talk a little bit about them towards the end, too, bit more about that. But you have a specialty area that's really unusual for social work. I think it is, and you can tell me if it's not, and that's forensic social work.
No, you're very correct. It is unusual. And in fact, it was only until 2003 that forensic social work was listed in the Encyclopedia of Social Work. Mm. And most people, when I mention that I'm a forensic social worker, kind of cock their head sideways and go, what is that? And according to the National Organization of Forensic Social Work, of which I'm a member, forensic social work is the application of social work theory and practice methods to issues relating to law and criminal justice. What that means is when you begin talking about criminal justice systems and the court judiciary system, there is almost an inherent tension between the field of social work and the field of law. As social workers, we're called upon to advocate for issues of social justice, economic justice, looking at the entire person, the person and their environment, okay? What happens in the court system, though, is it's set up as a very adversarial relationship. You have a defendant. You have a plaintiff. There are charges being made. There is defense being made against those charges. And quite often, when the social worker enters that realm, they find themselves challenged because there is a high level of critical review, a high level of challenging that occurs within the court system in terms of information, background of the parties involved in a case or a suit, if it's a civil suit. And the forensic social worker needs to have enhanced additional training beyond what you receive at the graduate level. You need to have a grasp of the legal issues in the law, the statutes at hand, rules of evidence, how they test an expert to determine if you have the expertise necessary to help the court understand the information underlying a particular case.
Yeah. Let me ask you, though, when you go in with that expertise and the training, do you go in as a friend of the court, or do you go in for one side or the other, even though you may be professionally an advocate for some people?
Well, as I tell my students, most questions in the field and in life begin with the same two words. It depends. And it depends in this situation as well. There are times when I have functioned as a friend of the court, working for the court to explain a situation in the background of a family. And then there are other times when I'm working either for the plaintiff or the defendant. In their counsel to explain a particular set of facts or present background information to the court so that the judge and the jury can understand and come to a proper conclusion. As an expert, when you're talking interacting with the court, there's basically two cut types of witnesses. There's a witness of fact. A witness of fact would be if you and I were standing on the street corner out here and someone ran a red light and hit someone with another vehicle. And we then had to go to court and testify, well, the light was red, and this person in a red car came through the red light. They didn't attempt to stop, and they broadsided this other vehicle on the right-hand side. That's a witness of fact. We're describing what we saw or describing what we heard. We might even describe what we felt, if that was relevant, okay? An expert witness, though, is venturing forth an opinion about a given set of circumstances. So, for example, depending upon the question at hand, as an expert, you might be called upon to testify upon your opinion based upon that set of facts. If an individual, in this case, with a traffic accident, you might be an accident reconstructionist. Mm-hmm. And you might testify as to issues such as speed, vectors of force. Could the vehicle stop in time given the speed it appeared to be going? Based upon the skid marks, does the speed of the vehicle, as the evidence shows, correspond to the statements of the witnesses, you and I, and the driver of the vehicle? That would be an opinion based upon experience and special knowledge and special training. Now, when you do that, as an expert witness, you also have to take into account answering to what is called a Daubert standard.
Say again?
Daubert. The Daubert standard came out of a case several years ago between Daubert versus Dow Pharmaceutical. In that case, the court wanted to know that what the expert is testifying to meets a scientific standard of reliability, that you just didn't have someone coming in saying, oh, yeah, they're going too fast, and I think this and I think that, without an underpinning, an underlying foundation of accepted, critically reviewed scientific knowledge to base that opinion on. Then that case was then reaffirmed. That was a U.S. Supreme level case. Then another case called Kumho Tire Company versus Carmichael, it was reaffirmed that even in situations where the evidence may not be technically scientific, there needs to be an underlying foundation, an acceptable knowledge base. And for social workers, we have that. We go through extensive training through our graduate education. We go through field placements where we're trained and well-versed in the person and environment perspective and the biopsychosocial assessment. So that meets the Daubert test. Now, it's a little bit of a challenge because when I go into court, one of the first criticisms I'm given as an expert is, well, sir, you're not a doctor. Is that correct? Well, no, I'm not. So as an expert, you need to be prepared whether you're going in working for one side or the other, or you're called upon the court as a friend of the court to offer testimony as an expert, to be prepared to be attacked. You either attack an expert based upon their credentials. Well, you're not a doctor, sir. No, I'm not a doctor. I'm this, this, and this. Or you attack their conclusions, trying to refute them or have a rebuttal expert witness come up and criticize them or basically tear them apart. Mm-hmm. Or you try to just frazzle the expert witness so that they lose their train of thought and they lose their focus. The challenge here is being focused on who is your client, presenting the information in a very factual base. Don't take the attacks personal, because they're not, even though they may appear to be, okay? They're not.
That's their job.
That is their job, and you need to look at it from that perspective. But it's a very different perspective than as social workers we're used to. We're used to engaging in, hopefully, predominantly collaborative relationships, okay? Working with and building partnerships to address issues and problems. What happens, though, in court is that's not often the case, and we need to address sometimes and move into a mode called conflict and confrontation. And you need to do that in a very professional manner. You don't take it personal. You don't lose your cool. You simply may have to repeat the same answer to the same question time after time after time.
What would take you, though, into a case involving a social worker and would put you in the position of having to be that expert witness and at the same time not necessarily advocating based on your background as a social worker, but based on, well, what would be the facts of the case? How do you do that?
One example would be I could get a call from an attorney who is representing a plaintiff. This individual is suing a social service agency, and the basis of the suit is a malpractice. And they're alleging damages as a result of the practice that the social worker or the agency engaged in. I would be called upon by that attorney to render an opinion based upon the standard of care in the field, based upon the Code of Ethics for NASW and based upon state licensing and regulations, was the care proper? Did it reach the proper standard of care? Did the agency follow their protocol, their policies and procedures? Did the social worker do their job? And in doing that, I would have to review all the documents connected to the case. Quite often, if you're familiar with how photocopy paper comes in a box, that's typically the size box I get when I accept a case of documents. And those documents could be medical documents, medical history, treatment plans, treatment progress notes, agency policy procedure manuals. I'll also consult state regulation manuals that I have on file to determine if, for example, was the treatment plan reviewed according to state regs to make sure that it was current with the problems presented by the client in the therapy session. Did the clinician document in the progress note that they were addressing the problems as identified in the treatment plan? Did the psychiatrist, for example, meet with the client in the way they should have as stipulated by the agency's policies and procedures? And then I'll take all that information and I review it and I assimilate it. And this is the part that I love. This is why one of the reasons I love doing this. There's so much information contained in that box in that case. As a social worker, one of the things that I was trained in my graduate education was something called simultaneous dual focus, where you need to simultaneously keep your focus on all these other elements and keep them weighed in equally. And that's what I have to do in these situations, that I have to render the opinion back to the attorney. And when I do that, I identify both the strengths and weaknesses of the case. There are experts out there who are called, the polite term is hired guns, who will say whatever the attorney wants them to say. I don't have much respect for them.
No.
The true expert witness will be compensated for their time in reviewing the materials, but the opinions are theirs, whether they're flattering, whether they're unflattering, or whether they're supportive to the case. And I warn the attorney up front, this is what I do. When I give you my report, whether it's in writing or verbal, and some attorneys want a verbal report and others want a full written report, I will tell you what I see that's good, I will tell you what I see that's bad, and I will tell you what if I was on the other side of this case where I would attack, and I will tell you where you can withstand attacks.
As a social worker who is dealing in the legal aspects of so many of these things, how would you see it if, in fact, you felt that there was some treatment that was needed in this situation rather than, say, jail for somebody?
Well, that happens quite a lot, just in general practice. Our society, unfortunately, and speaking as a social worker now, we tend to respond to individuals who violate the law with one response. We arrest them, prosecute them, and lock them up. It's not that simple. There's an old saying that I was raised by my mother, there before the grace of God go I. And I've seen far, far too many cases where an individual, in some cases, due to no fault of their own, or sometimes they've made poor and bad choices, and they have to bear responsibility for that, they get themselves in a situation where they commit an act. Now, it may be still I'm slightly naive, even though I've been at this for 20 years, but I don't believe that children wake up and decide, well, I want to be a murderer when I grow up. I want to be a drug addict when I grow up. There's an old commercial about that several years ago that sticks in my head. As a social worker, I feel it's my ethical mandate to point out accurately what I see. That may not reflect well on a given individual or agency or entity, but that's my mandate as a social worker. It's my mandate to do that, to hold up the banner of social justice and the need for change, to hopefully make the world a better place for my children when they grow up and for their children after them.
You're listening to University Forum. My guest, Mr. James Andrews, a diplomat certified forensic counselor, also a forensic fellow of the American College of Forensic Examiners. There's so much that goes into what you're doing, and give me an idea as to why you went into this facet of work, which is a little different than the clinician that you were at some time ago, where that was strictly the major part of your job.
Well, in a way, I have to answer that. I also have to, in a way, answer it in the same style I would do a court report. Quite often in looking at a defendant's history, I have to go beyond when they were born. For me, I have to go beyond when I was a social worker. I have to go even beyond when I went into undergraduate work. When I was in high school, I had the good fortune of taking a general psychology class with a wonderful teacher, Mr. Rosano. And in that course, I became fascinated with one of the things we were studying was twin studies. and how twins grow up and develop differently based upon their environments, and especially the separated twin studies. And it just fascinated me at how someone, even whether they were separated or living in the same home and the same environment, could develop differently. Years later, that same interest got re-triggered when I was in my graduate work as a Master's of Social Work student. I was doing an internship at a facility for adolescent sex offenders, which I also worked at. And I realized, or reconnected with, I guess would be a better way to put it, my fascination with the deviant mind. That what happens to turn an otherwise normal individual, to turn that mind, to twist that mind, what happens and how does that get expressed? And the challenge of understanding that deviance. From that moment, from that kind of light switch going on, I had previously been working with trauma victims predominantly. I began going to more seminars, focusing my work and my career into a more of a forensic area of learning as much as I could about the offender, how the offender thinks, relating that back to my practice. While I was doing that, I was also seeing regular clients, individuals having marital problems, children experiencing difficulties with their parents in school, parental separation and trauma. But throughout my career was this forensic thread that continuously got wound and wound. And now it's still a big piece of my career. Mm-hmm. Even in my full-time job, I utilize those forensic skills when I have to do a risk assessment or risk management investigation.
Well, in a way, it ties in very closely with what you're doing as a social worker. And so many people think of social work in a very narrow perspective rather than seeing how it can be building blocks for so many other things to do.
I was actually yesterday morning was meeting with the new executive director of our Pennsylvania chapter of NESW. And one of the elements we talked about was that very thing, the public perception of social work. And unfortunately, most people view a social worker as the person that takes a kid from their parents.
That's right.
That's the predominant viewpoint of a social worker. And what social work does is so much more. I mean, the varied roles of a forensic social worker are as varied in the court is as varied as the social work professions that we engage in. You, for example, are a radio host, okay? A professor. I teach as well. We work in political offices. We advise senators and governors and congressmen on policy decisions. We work in hospital emergency rooms and are there when a family comes in because of a horrendous medical trauma and try to help them. We're there with a family when there's a transplant need and identify the transplant need. We are there in the treatment office trying to help a family find a way to come back together or stay together. We run for public office. We're U.S. senators and congressmen and state representatives and state senators. It's amazing the breadth of what a social worker truly does. We're not really pigeonholed. I think that's why people have a hard time understanding what we do.
Because it is so
broad-reaching and so the breadth is so tremendous and varied and diverse.
Mm-hmm. When you are involved in the forensic area, is this your private practice that I noticed that you actually have your own business?
Yes, it is.
Huh?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
The name of the business is Forensic Behavioral Associates, and it's been in existence for several years. I've changed the name once or twice as I've moved from state to state. Having come to Pennsylvania, I'm hoping this is my last move. This is my home now until I retire. But I've consulted on various cases, malpractice cases involving psychiatric hospitals in client deaths. I've consulted in sexual abuse criminal cases, wrongful death cases, and civil suits.
Give an example of one or two of those cases and how it worked and worked out either in the direction you would have hoped or otherwise.
Let's see, I'm trying to think of a good one to use. And I also have to change some of the information for confidentiality. Yeah. Let me try to talk in terms of a wrongful death case I worked on recently. It involved a child in an agency. And what I did in that case is assist the attorney in understanding the standards of care, as I mentioned earlier. And I discussed in my report, I went through the treatment records line by line and helped the attorney understand what a professional counselor, a professional social worker would have done, and identified the areas where they did a great job in identifying problems and identifying areas where they missed the problem and then showed the attorney why they missed it, that the information was contained in the record, that they had gathered the information but had failed to weight the information properly, had failed to document it where they needed to document it, had failed to follow their own policies and procedures in terms of identifying the client as high risk and getting that client moved into the appropriate level of care. And then also in the same case, I was called upon to rebut the defendant's expert witness. The defense also had their own expert who came in and reviewed the same records, I believe, that I did, but came to a very, very different conclusion than I had. Their conclusion was that the treatment was okay, that it met the standard of care. So I went back through the record again, point by point, identifying, well, no, this is not really what happened, and this is not the standard of care. You need to see the client this number of times before you can engage in this treatment. These symptoms were present, and these symptoms indicate the following disorder. And it was missed, but it was contained within the record. Mm. Okay. That would be, in that case, the outcome, I was very happy with it. Settled out of court. So I believe that the family was satisfied with the work. I believe the attorney was satisfied with the work.
Do you ever feel like in a situation as you just described that you wish you could go in there and tweak some of these problems that you see in the particular agency or how it was handled?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. I have a fairly high standard of practice for myself that I set, and I tend to, when I supervise staff directly, I know I irritated them quite often because I would go through their charts and I would demand, no, this is not, you get to do this differently. But yes, I would definitely like to be able to go into that type of agency, if not the agency itself, and say, let me help you here. Let me show you where you're missing some things. What we do is so incredibly complex in terms of we meet an individual as social workers, whether we're a forensic social worker or a clinical social worker, family-based, home-based, school-based, and we're attempting to understand another person's life within the whole context of their life, their family relationships, their friendships, their vocational relationships, to bring that into a coherent picture to help them address an issue, make an improvement, and move forward. The example I give to my students is it's almost like you're a surgeon. It's that complex. But whereas the surgeon has very tangible tools and a tangible patient and organs and structures to touch and manipulate, we're manipulating the unseen. We're trying to help the person reframe their experience of trauma so that they don't look at themselves as a victim, but look at themselves as a victor, as someone who has not just survived, but can come out the other side stronger and hopefully in some respects better than they were.
You know, one of the issues that always obtains when we deal with working in one particular case, for example, is the difference between the consultant, which is to some extent what you become as you come in an individual situation, and then withdrawing from that with all the desire to stay in there and help them do it right. But you can't do that.
No, you can't.
You can't do it.
And that's one of the struggles as a social worker. Again, whether it's in the forensic practice or when I was providing direct treatment to families and children, You called upon, from both standard of care perspective and from NASW's code of ethics, to maintain boundaries with your clients.
And this transcends even the individual client, because we have social workers who work in communities and in some of the federal agencies and things of that sort.
A client is more than just a person. It could be an entity, an organization, an agency, a country.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And we're called upon to, at one point, care deeply and genuinely about our clients, whatever form they take. But simultaneously, we have to be clinically objective. And sometimes that is hard to do because we generally come to care for our clients. But if you don't disengage and allow them to move on, you run the risk of fostering dependence. And then while you may think you're helping them, you're not.
And even though I've been out of the field of clinical for a good while, isn't it similar, though, to when a child grows and if you keep trying to do everything for them?
It is very similar. You know, I work with a lot of families in my career, and some of them, that was the problem at hand. A parent who had experienced some trauma in their background and was very, very anxious and fearful to protect their child from the same trauma. The best of intentions. None of us who are parents want our children to be harmed or hurt. But our children are not ours.
And those agencies are not ours to continue with beyond certain time frames, too.
Exactly.
And you've gone through quite a few things in your life. You have a fascinating background as far as the work that you've done, the agencies. And you talk about going to different parts of the country. You've lived in a number of places. Where were you? Where did you get born and raised?
I was born in Salem, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. I lived in Massachusetts for a while and then kind of moved between Rhode Island and Massachusetts for a number of years. And then I lived in Florida briefly as a teenager. And I actually lived here in Pennsylvania as a teenager briefly, up in Butler. And then I lived in West Virginia for about 4 or 5 years, and then moved here to Pennsylvania following West Virginia.
And we have you back home here in this area for a little while, for today at least.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, you say your family, you have children?
Yes. Yes, I have 3 kids.
Okay, good, good. As we try to bring together the ending of our show as we wind down, talk a bit more about your website and what it means to have an office and a separate kind of entity from all the other things you do. What is that like, and what is that website for that you have?
The website is mainly a tool so that people who are interested, it's a tool and a communication tool and information tool. One purpose it serves is to allow people a place to go to take a look at my credentials. I list my credentials. I list some of the general employment settings I've had, the services I provide as a forensic social worker, so they can make a determination before they contact me. I also have a link there for email. They can contact me that way if an attorney wants to give me a brief set of facts that I can take a look at, or they can call the phone number that's listed there.
Give us the website or how they can reach you.
I'm in the middle of moving servers, so if people go there right now, they may not get it, so give me a little bit of time to get that up and running again. But the website is www.forensicbehavioral.com.
Okay. www.forensicbehavioral.com.
And the phone number, if someone wants to get hold of me right away, is 724-493-4290.
Say it again.
724-493-4290.
Well, when it comes to legal things, it looks like you have a combination of so many different experiences and backgrounds, and I wish I could list all of the different awards and memberships that you have. I see that you've had, you're with Marquis Who's Who in the East, and also Who's Who in the World, and that's wonderful. And in healthcare and medicine, you have experiences and forensic fellow, American College of Forensic Examiners, all kinds of interesting things. What would you like to say as we end about forensic social work and why you find it's both exciting, interesting, and helpful?
I guess for me, personally, the excitement comes from the challenge and the complexity of the issues I have to address as a forensic social worker. There's no limit to them. I mean, I'm looking into a person's life. And to really understand them, that sometimes requires me to actually go to the time before they were born to put together a proper report for an attorney. And I find that process of investigation and analysis and review extremely emotionally and intellectually fascinating and satisfying. But beyond just my own personal gratification, I feel it's an extension of my duty as a social worker. By interacting with the court system in this way, I'm providing a service to them that has actually been recognized by states like New York, as the social worker is almost perfectly suited because of our training and background to fill a very needed niche in the court system of explaining why people do what they do, how they do what they do, and helping juries and judges come to more well-informed decisions for the cases that they are confronted with, particularly with social service issues. They are so complex. The rules and regulations that social workers and counselors and psychiatrists, psychologists have to operate under are so complex. And the issues at hand in terms of psychology and emotional development are so complex for juries to understand. How could an individual commit this act or get into this situation? I feel I'm contributing in that manner, that the jury and the judge can make a proper, well-informed decision.
Well, Mr. James Andrews, recipient of innumerable awards and honors and contributing so much to the field of social work and helping other parts of society that go beyond our profession as social workers, I want to thank you so much for being my guest on University Forum.
Thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
I'm Gene Moore, host and executive producer of University Forum. Please send your comments by email to jemore@temple.edu or call my voicemail 215-204-4376.